Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. My name is Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I just took out the cash that I have in my wallet. And on these bills, let's see, I have a couple dollar bills here. I've got a five. I've got a 10. They say Federal Reserve Note. So these are Federal Reserve Notes. And what I'd like to do today is complete a discussion on money that I started a while back that we've been wanting to get to, and what is money. Now, at Bob Enyart Live, we have our site online. It's called KGOV, KGOV.com. And on our homepage, we have something. I don't know if other talk shows have something like this. If you know of any, call us sometime or email us. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. And our email here is bob@kgov.com. If you know of another talk show that has this, let me know. But on our homepage, we have an errata link. Errata, in other words, the errors that we've made over 20 years here at Bob Enyart Live, we list them online. We have two ways of correcting errors that we make on the show. When you click on the errata link, you find out the two ways. One is our really big errors that we become aware of and convinced of. We list those on that errata page. And another way is for lesser errors. If we make lesser errors, then we'll correct those in the show itself or in the show summary for that particular show. But when errors have real potential to hurt people, to seriously confuse their understanding of the world, of reality, and we become aware of that, then we put it on our errata page. And so the first of the serious errors we've made is on money. And as I've said on the air over the years, it's not what I don't know that's so bad, it's what I know that isn't so. That's what really hurts us. It's not so much our ignorance, it's our pride and digging in on something that's not true. And even then, when others come with evidence that we're wrong, it takes humility and it takes energy, because to rethink a position we hold could be difficult. So the first item is money on our Bob Enyart Live errata page. And so what is money? Well, in the 1990s here at Bob Enyart Live, I wrongly supported a return to the gold standard, believing that that was the only just form of money. I thought we had to return to a gold standard whereby currency in the past, we've had currency that was based upon reserves of precious metals. After studying and thinking about money for a number of years, reading economic texts and reflecting on the Bible, interviewing, talking with people who, you know, not only professionals in the financial world, but questions put to some of the leading, the kind of people that might help a nation set up a national bank, for example, putting questions to some fascinating people around the world about money. And after doing all that, I have come to the understanding that money is not gold or silver. That's not what money is. Money is more like a transferable IOU. It's more like that than it is gold and silver. But most accurately, here is what I think is the most accurate definition of money. Money is the accounting of a transferable, incomplete transaction. So when you make a transaction with someone, if you're growing, let's say you're on an island and you know how to climb trees and get coconuts and somebody else fishes and you trade a coconut for some fish, you haven't brought money into existence. That's bartering, and the transaction is complete. And so there's no money there. There's no money. Now, an IOU gets you toward the notion of what money is, but it has to be transferable, and there always has to be an aspect to it that it's an incomplete transaction. Once everyone has their account settled, then all money would disappear. It would no longer become worth anything for trade or for anything, because the money itself would be expunged once all the accounts were settled. Now, that might be a little confusing, but let's talk about that more. So I'm saying that money is the accounting. It's taking account, keeping track of transferable, incomplete transactions. So let's think about metal, paper, and the internet. Back when technology did not exist to support a more effective and lower cost accounting system, back, for example, in the cultures in the world when the Bible was being written, reasonably, they implemented their monetary system based on precious metals, gold and silver. Well, why would they do that? Well, nobody can create gold, right? So it's very difficult to counterfeit money because you can't create it. You can't create gold. Well, later, the printing press enabled the convenience of paper currency, made it really easy and standardized for millions of people, or billions of people even. And so that made it easier, especially with larger transactions, than carrying around gold, which could be pretty heavy. And now the internet enables the convenience of online transactions. And the extraordinary benefit to the lives of millions of people from these conveniences outweigh the risks of counterfeits and deception. There is risk to that. You might have a PayPal account, and somebody might hack your account and buy goods and services for themselves with your money, but that's sort of like them coming into your home and stealing gold from you. It's sort of like that. But so the convenience and the lower cost is a factor in determining, well, what's the best money system that we can use here in America or anywhere in the world? Well, what is it that makes the economy function? What makes the economy run? Well, in the Bible, God commands men to serve one another. We read that in Galatians chapter 5, verse 13, serve one another. Men who are shipwrecked on a deserted island, they would gradually build an economy as they served one another. And that economy would grow most quickly if these men were free, for the Bible says that liberty provides the opportunity to serve one another. Just check out Galatians chapter 5. So liberty, somebody on that island might be strong and force everyone else to be a slave, but that would harm economic prosperity. So if everyone is free and they're able to serve one another, then their economy would grow most rapidly. And if they started to keep to themselves, and if they did not trade goods and services, then their economy would sputter and die. So an economy thrives when men serve one another. Now, money, how is money created? Well, people who think money is silver and gold, they think all the money of the world was created when the earth was created, when these precious metals were put in the crust of the earth. That's when money was created. But if money is the accounting of transferable, incomplete transactions, then when God created the earth and there were minerals throughout the earth, and gold and silver, diamonds, and so on, then that wasn't money. Those were minerals. They're not. That wasn't money. There were no incomplete transactions. So how is money created? Well, money is properly created by fiat. By fiat. What if, like, God created the world by fiat? He spoke and created the earth from nothing. He created it from nothing. Well, that's how money is created. If these shipwrecked men washed ashore on a deserted island that had no gold, still, they actually would create money. Even if there's no gold, there's no silver on that island, they would create money by fiat as they entered into agreements that created something like transferable IOUs. And the same thing is true in any nation. Every time someone buys a car or a home on credit, they thereby commit themselves to years of hard work to pay back the loan, or at least to the obligation to pay off the loan. Maybe they get the money from their wealthy grandmother. And that commitment of theirs to, okay, I'm going to work now for 15 years to pay back the money that it costs to buy this home, that commitment actually brings money into existence. So that is a measurement of the economy. And we're going to work hard to pay off loans. And so money is the accounting of transferable, incomplete transactions. And so now I bought this car, but I'm not done paying it off. And so the bank or some creditor has loaned me money to pay off this car. And in doing so, you actually improve the economy. Now, debt, of course, like anything, food, if you eat too much food, it's a problem. Sleep, if you sleep too much, it's a problem. Debt, if you have too much debt, it's a problem. But debt of this sort, debt actually can help grow the money supply and the economy. So is this confusing or is it not? I'm not sure, actually, how confusing it is. Let's talk through it a little bit more. Our banks, I remember years ago when I was working out a loan to a family member. And I thought, okay, I'm gonna loan this person $2,000, and he's offered to give me, 5%. And I get out my computer calculator and I figure out, and I look at it and I say, this is really not all that great of a deal, making a loan and getting interest. If there's any maintenance whatsoever to this, like let's say the person doesn't pay on time, you have to call them. Any overhead whatsoever, it's going to eat up the profit on the loan. It's just not worth it. It's not worth the time to arrange the terms. And so then I wondered, how could banks make money on loans? How could they do it? And I found out by looking into it that banks don't loan you the money that they have. They loan you money they don't have. It's called a fractional banking system, which we have here in America. And so a bank, if they have $10,000, and they loan you $10,000, they don't now have zero. To make it simple, let's say 10%, they now have $9,000 because they took the $1,000, they have $10,000, they want to loan you $10,000. Well, they took $1,000 and put it into this transaction, and they created $9,000 out of thin air. That's what you get when you get a license to run a bank. You get a license to print money, basically. to create money. And so you've now, you took 1,000 of the money you your bank has in reserve, and you gave a loan for 10,000. So now you're getting interest on the $10,000. Now it's a different ball game. Then I could see how banks could make a good profit because they're not loaning out the money they have once. They're loaning it out over and over and over, and they have to keep a certain amount in reserve based on our banking regulations. And so what happens then when the person pays back that $10,000? They use the money to buy a used car, and they're paying it back. Well, when the bank gets back the money that it created by fiat, it expunges the money. It expunges it. So let's say you make a payment of $100. Well, the bank takes that payment, and $90, they just erase. It's like it's gone. And $10, they put back into their own reserves. And they get to keep the interest. So they keep the interest, but they expunge the amount of money that they created by fiat. Anybody who understands the economy, you could tell by now I don't have a degree in any of these things. It's just my own interest. But so fractional banking, many conservatives, some conservatives, some liberals, have bought into this argument that fractional banking is immoral, that it's unjust. And I submit that fractional banking is completely justifiable. And it's an understanding how money actually functions. And that justifies the modern world's fractional banking system. Because lenders, they actually do bring money into existence when they make good loans. They make good loans, and then there is a commitment from someone to work hard for 3 years or 30 years to pay back the loan, and then they expunge the principal as it's being repaid, the part that they created by fiat. Now, in the Bible, God regulated Israel's system of debt. He regulated it. He didn't prohibit debt. And that shows that debt is not inherently immoral. Debt can be good or bad, like fire. So God regulates things in Scripture that require regulating, but he doesn't regulate sin. Like God doesn't say, when you commit adultery, do it this way. That would be immoral because adultery is inherently immoral. But regarding debt, God regulates debt for Israel, saying, you know, here's ways you can loan money, and here's ways I'd rather you not loan money and borrow money. Now, as to the particulars of our own country, we don't live in the Bible days. Well, actually, we do. We do. This is the New Testament time, and we're somewhere between Paul's epistles and the book of Revelation. So we do live in the Bible days. But we have a modern economy, and so when we think about our modern economy, we have a Federal Reserve system, and the Federal Reserve has, to the best of my knowledge, has never been audited. And I think it would be very wise for the Federal Reserve to be audited. I think it's unreasonable for the Federal Reserve to exist and function as it does and to not be audited. Now, the Federal Reserve is not part of the federal government. There's a relationship, but it's not part of the government. So people complain about the Federal Reserve that it's not run by the government. I actually prefer that we do not have the government run our monetary system. If somebody believes that the government is expert at everything it does and it really functions better than private industry, I could imagine why they would want the government to run the monetary system, but I don't believe that. I think that God has given government a very narrow role, and that the government should focus on just the things that God has authorized it to do, infrastructure and criminal justice. And so so running a national bank is not the purview. God didn't say to governments, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to run public schools and a national bank. So I think it would be a mistake for the government to operate the Federal Reserve. But it should be audited, I believe. And let's see. So what have we talked about so far? What money is and what it's not. I believe money is not gold. Right? I believe money comes into existence when we have incomplete transactions where the state of that transaction is transferable. So let's talk about gold for a moment, about gold. And if you think about gold being the standard for money, now gold is expensive because there are so many people who want it. And so it turns out that if gold is your standard for money, you are going to have an extremely expensive system for tracking money. In fact, what you need to do is fill bank vaults to the ceiling with gold bars and hide them under the ground in different places around the country. That's expensive. I think gold is not the gold standard in money. The proper way to judge a monetary standard is to evaluate its effectiveness, its accountability, and its efficiency, its low cost. And gold is extremely expensive. Requiring a gold standard inflates the value of gold by fiat. You realize that? People who want a return to a gold standard, they're against money by fiat. Well, when the government requires a gold standard, if they say the only legal tender in our nation, it has to be based on gold, then they are inflating the value of gold by fiat. It's just their word saying, okay, the government, we will only approve of and accept transactions based on gold. Well, that's just their word. And so by their spoken word, now all of a sudden gold is inflated dramatically. So that's, it's hard to get away from money by fiat. As a result, there is an unnecessary redistribution of wealth when the government says we're going to require gold for our monetary system. That causes a redistribution of wealth by which governments transfer wealth to some individuals, some corporations, and certain countries that happen, for example, to find gold on their land. So you have some countries somewhere in the world, and they happen to find gold. And so now billions of dollars from around the world transfer to that country. Now, for what purpose? Why? Just by an accident of economic policy? And that, by the way, that's one way that America ciphered manufactured goods from Europe. Not that it was immoral or unjust, but we benefited and Europe got hurt. America ciphered manufactured goods from Europe in return for inflated gold because we were on the gold standard. And then we demineralized our money, and that devalued England's vaults. So Great Britain would send us whatever they sent us, whatever goods we purchased from them, whether it was anything from a locomotive to a player piano, we would send gold across the Atlantic eastward, and westward would come durable goods, very valuable. And so Europe's vaults filled with gold, and we got all these goods that we used to build further prosperity, and then we went off the gold standard, and their vaults dropped tremendously in value. Now, the locomotives didn't drop tremendously in value at that time for that reason, or the pianos or the tools we purchased. So there is a risk to a gold standard that I think many conservatives have not thought through. Gold does not have intrinsic value. They often say, well, gold, it doesn't. Gold does not have intrinsic value, but as with everything of value, every item that is valued, its worth lies in the eyes of the beholder. A wealthy nation dying of thirst would trade all of its gold for water. So gold doesn't have inherent value. Gold also is not for hiding. That's not the best use of gold for hiding. Basing a nation's currency on gold results in building fortresses like Fort Knox, hidden from view, and filling them up with gold to back the certificates that are issued. But God didn't create gold to be dug up and then buried again, forever, stored away from sight and not used in underground vaults. That is an inefficient and extremely expensive way of implementing an accounting system, and it robs that gold from its practical use for technology and beauty. So I've wanted for some time to take a whole show and talk about what is money, but I think that money is not gold. I know a lot of conservative talk radio, they have advertisers who spend millions getting people to buy gold. And in the last couple years, gold has been a good buy. But for the previous 20 years, gold was a lousy buy. And the people who tell you that your Federal Reserve notes are worth nothing, you want to have gold, you notice what they take for the gold? They say, send us your Federal Reserve notes and we'll give you the gold. So it's like, what do they really want? Your Federal Reserve notes or their gold? They already have the gold. If your Federal Reserve notes are worth nothing, why do they want them? And why would they ever give you gold for them? So that's a bit of a scam. And of course, we need to be wise. And gold is, a reasonable part of somebody's portfolio of investments if they have money to invest. But so gold is not money. Money is not gold. Money is keeping track of transferable incomplete transactions. You could read about this at kgov.com. What is money? Just click on our writings or our errata. May God bless you.